Live from Sydney, Australia. Exclusively on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. This is Wrestling's Week That Was. Here is your host, Joel the Man O'Brien.
Don't you hate it when you do an hour, a little bit over an hour of talking about all the major news and angles and matches of the week, and then you air the show and you click the M record button and you look down at your mic and you realize your mic is on mute. This is why the show is starting an hour and a half after it's meant to be its scheduled starting time, guys. So, because we've already done this show, but we're going to do it again because we've got Oliver Norgrove. He's going to be coming up. He's going to be joining us momentarily. Let's just do it all as we usually do. Actually, we've got Oliver on the line right here, right now.
Oliver,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. How are you?
Oh, there you go. I'm pretty good. Pretty good for Wrestling's Week That Was Part 2.
At least we can all hear you this time.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, no. I silly thought when you called before, when we were doing our previous recording, I thought that because you were struggling to get on the show, your audio quality might have been bad and you couldn't hear me. I didn't think it had anything to do with me, but it had everything to do with me. So, apologies for keeping you up so late. How are you?
I'm doing all right, actually. I'm not tired, so don't worry about the lateness. And more importantly, though, I'd like to welcome everybody to a very special Clash of the Accents edition to Wrestling's Week That Was.
Exactly. We've got a different feel to this show than all the other ones. We've got a ton to cover today. As always, I have no earthly idea how we're going to fit it all into a small show like this one, but we're going to definitely try. We've got a brand new WWE World Heavyweight Champion in Brock Lesnar coming out of a very memorable SummerSlam from last Sunday night, so we'll be definitely touching base with that. Hulk Hogan wants to wrestle again, and he wants his WrestleMania match with Cena, so we'll definitely get into that issue as well. Alberto De Rio and Rey Mysterio are making waves at the AAA promotion in Mexico. What does this mean, if anything, for WWE's business? As always, we'll be talking Raw, Main Event, NXT, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, and so much more, as we always do every single second Saturday. But before we delve into this week's hot topics, remember we are live. If there's anyone else still out there listening to us live, we are going live, so that means you can interact with the show at any time by calling 760-888-5749. Or tweeting me directly at Wrestling Outbreak, and I will read and discuss your tweets live on the PWP airwaves. How was your week, Oliver? Was it a good week, or was it a stressful week?
No, not stressful at all. I mean, it's the summer, so break before going back to uni, so nothing much to do. As you said, a lot of wrestling this week, so it's been a positive week, so obviously that's good for the show. There's a lot to get into, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the good thing is, like, I think your keyword was it's been a positive week for pro wrestling. I think that a lot of people are getting caught up on a few issues that didn't really need to get caught up on. And let's just kick it off straight away. Let's get into the top news of the week. I mean, Brock Lesnar is now officially our new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. If you've been living under a rock for the last week, huge mixed reaction to the match itself and to the outcome. What do you think about this huge mixture of social media reaction that's been going on?
Honestly, it's shocked me because I think somewhere along the way, especially over the past week, wrestling fans have seemed to have forgotten how stories are told in wrestling. They seem to have lost this whole concept, and I think people have what's been frustrating for me is people have been fixating on the type of match we saw at SummerSlam, a very one-sided, not the sort of match you see often. And I know me and you, we've discussed this a lot, and we were both pleased with the main event. And I think it was one of the most enjoyable main events I've watched in recent years. So it was something different.
I, Yeah, I definitely consider it to be one of the greatest World Championship matches of all time, purely on the fact that it's just so unique. You've never seen anything like what we saw. We've never seen anyone like John Cena with his lineage, with his 10 years of being on top, with him 15 World Heavyweight Championships under his belt. We've never seen a World Champion of his caliber be treated like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think,
you go.
Different is always good in wrestling, and when it's on such a huge stage, like going back to WrestleMania 30, we had the ending of the streak. It was such a huge stage, and you had such a different atmosphere, almost different vibe coming from the match. And different is always good in wrestling for me, and that's what made SummerSlam a success, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. The only downside about the Undertaker thing that I have to disagree with is the fact that we saw the Undertaker streak end in such like sure, it was shock value was aplenty. Like, no one expected it, but the lead up and the build up to that was just it pales into comparison to what we saw. The build up to the SummerSlam match that happened last Sunday, I think, because you felt that this match was big. You felt that something big was going to happen, and with the Taker match, I think the story was very much lost and was very much just like your typical story. But moving on to the next biggest news of the week, Cena vs. Brock Part 2 is going to be happening a month from Sunday at Night of Champions. So, do you think it's a bit too soon that we're going to be getting this match straight away? Do you think that it's good that we're going to be getting Cena out of the way for new competitors? Or what's your take on the Night of Champions?
I actually think it's a little too soon. The reason why I say that is because the match at SummerSlam was so surprising in terms of the balance between each wrestler, and obviously Brock Lesnar came out with almost seemingly an easy win. It was an easy win for Brock, and to be honest, I think in storyline you look at John Cena and you almost think he needs time to recover from this. He needs time to come back, and while I'm not against seeing it at Night of Champions, because I'll be watching it and it'll be another good match, I think it's a little soon, but that's not necessary to say that it won't be good, but I definitely think it's quite soon for me.
Let me just throw out an idea to you, because as we'll get into the main event quickie review that we'll be doing later on, Triple H announced a main event that John Cena is invoking his rematch. Now, obviously, we have to wait till Raw to see John Cena's live in-person reaction to this match. But is it possible that the Authority kind of went above and beyond and booked the match without Cena knowing, kind of rushing him back to the match to kind of like take advantage of a weakened John Cena?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you in storyline, that does make sense, because the angle at the moment, the whole angle with the Authority is they don't want John Cena champion. So any way that they can kind of weaken him and make him put him in a vulnerable position, they will definitely try that. And I think that's what's happening here.
Very quickly, very early prediction. What's your prediction for the match?
My prediction for the match.
How's it going to go? Is it going to be just like Extreme Rules 2012, or are we going to see another SummerSlam?
Oh no, I don't think we're going to see another SummerSlam. I don't think WWE will do that to Cena. I think Brock will retain, and I think it will be a very much more even sided match. I think you're going to get much more competition, a little more suspense, and I think Brock will come out with the win, because I see him keeping the title for a little longer. What about you?
I've just got this feeling in the back of my head that maybe they might do what they do again in SummerSlam. But what a story to tell if John Cena goes into two main event big profile matches and gets destroyed twice. The room for telling interesting new stories is huge in regards to John Cena if he goes through that again. I'm not saying the heel turn philosophy idea that everyone beats home all over the internet. I'm not talking about him turning heel. I'm just talking about a different way of telling John Cena's story, because he's been on top for 10 years.
Exactly, and I think one of the gripes that fans have with him is you know, his ability to you know, fight against the odds and come back, and these odds really to him at the moment they do seem you know, incredible to come back from, which is why I'm hoping we don't get another John Cena fights back and, you know, overcomes the odds type story. I don't think we're going to get that. I really hope we don't get that at Night of Champions. So I definitely I see what you mean. I see what you mean about John Cena being destroyed two straight pay per views. I think that's a possibility, definitely. But either way, I think we both agree that Brock Lesnar will retain at Night of Champions, do we not?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a given. I think WWE has shown over the last 3 or 4 months, especially with their key storylines, that they're not idiots. They know when to put you know, add fuel to the fire and pull back. And like a good example is Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, which we'll be getting into very, very soon. But yeah, Brock is going to retain. They're not idiots. They're looking forward to the future. SummerSlam was a pure good example of them looking to the future, setting up Brock nicely. So we will see what happens at Night of Champions. So just moving on to other news. So we've got a ton to get into. Hulk Hogan has gone on record this week and says that he's super keen on getting back in the ring. He really, really wants that last WrestleMania match. And apparently he wants it against John Cena. Now, Aaron Ramadoff's got a good article up on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com talking about why Hulk Hogan shouldn't wrestle. And I'm definitely in the camp of Hogan never, ever, ever stepping in a wrestling ring again.
Definitely, because over the years he's been beaten and broken down so many times. His body surely can't take another high profile match. I mean, I know people will say, okay, well, it's only one match, surely he'd be okay. I mean, it's not even like that, because if you look at the injuries, especially to his spine, the injuries he's had, that's a lot of punishment he's taken. And I definitely don't want to see him get into the ring again. And Aaron's article was really good. I definitely agree with him. I don't think a lot of people will want to see him get back into the ring. And interesting this week, I actually made a prediction that for WrestleMania 31, we are going to see Hulk Hogan versus John Cena. I just have this strange feeling in the back of my mind that's what we're going to see. I hope I'm wrong. Do you think I'd be wrong?
I have to go with... I think you're wrong. I hope that you... I hope that we don't see Hogan and Cena. It's just... How would you play that out? What does that mean? We're going to see John Cena as a heel? I mean, I don't know. And plus the match itself. That means that we're going to have to see Hulk Hogan take an attitude adjustment. We're going to have to see him go into STF.
The thing about this match is... Hulk Hogan versus John Cena doesn't appeal to anybody, and if you think about it, it's true, because you have the kids who like Cena, the same kids who either don't know or don't care about Hulk Hogan, and you have, you know, your diehard Hulk Hogan fans who likely aren't going to be fans of John Cena, because older, more classic hardcore wrestling fans will not like John Cena. And also you have, you know, fans in the middle who want to see, you know, great wrestling matches. Hulk Hogan is not going to give you a great wrestling match. John Cena is capable of giving you a great wrestling match. Hulk Hogan is not. And for me, this is one of those matches that will appeal to absolutely nobody. And so definitely with regards to Hogan returning, I hope he doesn't. But you know, with Hulk Hogan's ego, you never know what he's thinking, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And in other news, we've got Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio making appearances at last Sunday's Triple Mania pay-per-view in Mexico. Del Rio was physically in the building and actually got involved in an angle, so it sounds like Del Rio is actually disregarding his 90-day no-compete clause. Whereas Rey Mysterio did a video package. I don't exactly know the content of the video package, but the fact that he was actually on the show, and I'm pretty sure that he's actually still under contract with WWE. Does this hamper or dampen WWE's business going forward?
To be honest, I think WWE. To be honest with you, Rey Mysterio. What does he offer the WWE anymore? I really do question that. I don't think he offers anything. I mean, he sold merchandise for years. He was a proven merchandise seller, definitely, with the masks, and he was a great performer. No, nobody can question that. But to be honest, nowadays, 2014, Rey Mysterio appearing for appearing with AAA, it slightly confuses me because obviously his contract situation is still very much up in the air, and nobody, at this point nobody really knows what's going on with his contract and his situation. I don't think WWE will be massively affected by it. I really don't.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, like, Mysterio's just been off television for so long that, and unfortunately he's got a wrestling style to maintain, and that style is very hard to do when you've had six knee surgeries and gone through the pain and torment that his body's gone through over the last few years. But in regards to Del Rio, I think Del Rio is making the best decision to forego his 90-day non-compete, because you're able to do that. It just means that for those 90 days, you are not insured with the payout package that you were contractually obligated to take. So I think it's the smartest thing for Del Rio to do, to stay relevant, because he's a hot topic at the moment. So yeah, you had some information about the Daniel Bryan injury as of late. What's been going on with that?
Daniel Bryan, it was reported about 4 days ago now. Daniel Bryan needs an extra surgery in his elbow, and basically the surgery required is supposed to be fixing a nerve problem he has in the elbow. It runs up and down his left arm, and it was actually ruptured. You remember he had a match with Daniel Bryan. I'm sorry, he had a match with Randy Orton last year on Raw, and the match was cut short when he had a stinger.
Yes.
That was actually the initial cause of this injury, and he's actually been carrying it for over a year now. And the surgery required is supposedly going to be sidelining him for an extra 3 or 4 months. So honestly, in terms of the timeline, in terms of the schedule for his return, we're looking at probably February, March 2015 now, maybe January, late January, because Brian, with all of these problems he's going on, he's got little niggles here and there in his shoulder and his neck, and top of his spine, and now in his elbow. When you run all of these injuries together, you know, you're going to create problems for yourself. So rest and staying away is definitely the best thing for his health right now. Whether it's the best thing for WWE, it remains to be seen.
I think the best thing for WWE right now, not knowing his schedule, is to keep him somewhat relevant on television. Now, I thought the Brie Bella Stephanie McMahon match from last Sunday was the perfect chance to get him on television. And like sure, he'll be a big deal regardless, but the timing's everything in wrestling, and he's been dealt a really severe, terrible time in his career. And I think the best thing for WWE to do, if they're not idiots, is to maintain his relevance in the company. Have him appear here and there, every second pay-per-view. Just do updates, do videos, do vignettes. Because right now, we've gone through a period of time where it's been Brie Bella, and I haven't really been seeing very much of Daniel Bryan. He's been talked about, I think there needs to be much more of a presence, considering you don't know when he's going to be coming back, to keep him relevant.
On the flip side of that is that you have once Daniel Bryan does return, it's going to be very, very, very surprising, long-awaited. Fans, if they haven't seen him in a long time, they're going to react very well to him. I understand what you're saying about him being relevant. Definitely, that's true. But obviously, there's definitely a suspense, a positive in terms of the suspense with his return. If you don't keep publicising him, I think Brie Bella's doing well on her own without him. She definitely, she's been utilising the yes chance. So she's trying to, she's trying to develop some kind of, contact with Bryan, even if he's not there. Definitely keeping him relevant is important, but I also would like him to I would also like him to stay away for a little while as well. Just so when he comes back, it'll be all the more important.
Oh yeah, it would definitely be a non-in-ring involvement. I'm talking promos. I'm talking hyping up issues that could eventuate, may not, depends, but just keep them relevant. Just very, very quickly, we're just going to rush through some of these other very brief news. If you know that TNA has now moved to Wednesday nights instead of Thursday nights, which is a good sign for TNA going into the end of 2014, because it has been revealed that Spike and TNA have decided to maintain their agreement until at least the end of 2014. So that's good for TNA because there was a big, huge month of worrying and not knowing what their future may hold. It's good considering that television has been great for the last like month or so. So it shows you what happens when Vince Russo has been taken out of the picture.
Well, yeah, also, I mean, regardless of the financial impact that the deal will have, it also removes the cloud, the dark cloud over TNA. They now have some kind of clarity, and they now know where they're going for, you know, at least the next sort of 7 months, six months, however many months are left of the year.
Yeah. And do you realize their biggest show of the year, Bound for Glory, is in 6 weeks?
Oh really? As you know, I'm not a huge TNA fan. But
you watch the television, you wouldn't even know where they're headed, considering it's 6 weeks until their WrestleMania, and they don't really even have a number one contender for the championship. But anyway, that just shows you that the company's all over the place. But hopefully this end date gives them a bit more structure and clarity. So let's just move into. What do we learn from SummerSlam? It's the way we review our pay-per-views here on Wrestling Week that was. We just we find three major points. And, Oliver, what's one of the major points that you learned from SummerSlam? What's the one thing that resonated with you?
Yeah, sure. So, for me, I was actually looking at Roman Reigns during SummerSlam. I was watching his match closely. I enjoyed the match. I thought it was okay. There was some very boring spots. But what struck me with Roman Reigns is that he still... He looks to me like he doesn't really, he's not really sure of himself. He's almost lost, and he needs something to kind of identify himself with. For example, as you know, with the breakup of the Shield, he got the entrance, he got the gear, he got the the same kind of characteristics. He didn't really change much post Shield. So I'm thinking with Roman Reigns, for him to be a really, really top star in the WWE, which is definitely possible, and he's got huge potential. I think he needs to, find himself a little bit, if that makes sense. He needs to break away from the Shield, you know, almost sever those ties, and form his own persona, his own character. Whether that's appearance-wise, or his moveset, or the way he speaks, the way he acts. I just think that he's too. It's almost like he doesn't want to get let go of the Shield, and for me, that would be detrimental to him because he needs to be. You know, the Shield is great, but the Shield are not one person. The Shield is three. He wants to succeed on his own. So for me, it struck me at SummerSlam when you see huge stars like Brock Lesnar and John Cena on the pay per view. You see, okay, well, you may not like them, but they're huge stars and they got there on their own. And for Reigns to do that, he needs to become very, very, you know, much more individualized. And that was what struck me with Roman Reigns, definitely.
Yeah, I think you hit some good points there in regards to making Roman Reigns different. I mean, Dean Ambrose is the lunatic fringe. Seth Rollins is now has got an affiliation with the Authority. Roman Reigns is still using the Shield music and all that stuff. Yeah, it's very, very true. I do love the Shield music with Roman Reigns. I think that's one thing you can keep because I like that. I like the beat. I like the aura that surrounds Roman Reigns with regards to the music. But yeah, I think he still has a lot to grow. He still has a lot of room left to grow into, and I think WrestleMania 31 is still in the cards to verse Brock Lesnar. But again, like, you know, he's still got a long way to go. And I think one thing that I took away from the first note that I wrote about with the Randy Orton Roman Reigns match is, God damn, Randy Orton's such a better wrestler than Roman Reigns. That's the first thing
Of
course.
I mean, Randy Orton's awful. I think Randy Orton's terrible. I think he's a great wrestler, don't get me wrong. He's a great in-ring wrestler. He's so bland. And I've had this argument so many times, especially over the last few months. He's so bland to me. And at this point, he should be the guy who's helping to elevate those around him, like Roman Reigns. And he is a much better wrestler than Roman Reigns, you're right.
Wait till we get to our SmackDown review this week. I think SmackDown's slowly becoming Randy Orton's show, where he kind of just lets loose a bit and does a few promos that he wouldn't usually do and show a bit of a mean streak that we've kind of missed from the Viper. So we'll get into the SmackDown review in a little bit, but the one thing I took from SummerSlam was how good a decisive finish is in pro wrestling. I mean, up and down the card, you literally had all these major matches, and just, like, Bray Wyatt defeated Chris Jericho, clean as a sheet. Brock Lesnar certainly defeated John Cena, clean as a sheet. You had, you know, obviously you had a few, you know, dirty finishes here and there, but like in regards to the Bella match, in regards to the Dean Ambrose match, but like it all played into the story, you know. Dolph Ziggler beat Miz, clean as a sheet. Like, it's good seeing these matches where there's just no bullshit, you know, like Paige defeated AJ, clean as a sheet. There's no thumb to the R or anything like that. I mean, like, it's good for heels and babyfaces to have like clean wins, and I think that was a good thing coming out of SummerSlam.
It's especially with heels as well, because it's not something you see often, especially on a pay-per-view, and you're exactly right, because how impactful and how meaningful is it, or how much more meaningful is it when you have a dominant or a clear, you know, a victory with clarity? I mean, when you have, say, looking at Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, I mean, who expected a clean win for Dolph Ziggler? Who expected a win for Dolph Ziggler? So when you see him decisively beat The Miz, you can't, you know, it takes you back a bit, and you're more impressed by what you see. And you're exactly right with regards to Bray Wyatt, and I'm glad Bray Wyatt got, you know, a clean win, and Brock Lesnar's win was probably the cleanest win we've seen in a long time. you don't get cleaner than that, I don't think.
Exactly.
So yeah, you're definitely right with the whole. I mean, we didn't see it with that Ambrose and Rollins. I know we'll get into that in a little bit. So maybe that might be a good segue. But yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the last thing I learned about SummerSlam, talking about impactful victories and great matches, is that one thing I learned is that lumberjack matches can actually be great when they play into a story. And we saw that in easily the greatest lumberjack match that I've seen in my 18 years of watching pro wrestling. I don't know about yourself, but like, my God, like, talk about a match that just intertwined with the story so well. The fact that well, how many 20 or so grown men, superstars that we know and love, couldn't even contain the hatred that Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose had in the ring. How poetic is that? I mean, like,
exactly.
Everything from the fact that the lumberjacks couldn't control them, they're in the crowd, then we come back in the ring, and the finishing sequence was almost beautiful. Almost felt like this was going to be the final match in the series. Like, you know, Dean Ambrose gets him, kisses him on the head, hits Dirty Deeds. Beautiful stuff. And then, of course, then Seth Rollins takes advantage of the smarge at the end because of your mate Kane, and it was fantastic. Amazing match. But any other week, it would be the match of the week, you know?
Exactly. I mean, that match was a rare example of how if you use the lumberjacks intelligently and you use them to benefit the story being told, you create something very, very entertaining and very powerful. Obviously, now for me, if you remember during the match, I think it was probably about 10 minutes in, you had Seth Rollins running away, trying to escape, and you had the lumberjacks block him off. And to me, you know, what do you have lumberjacks blocking, you know, closing both superstars in? You have, you know, you get that feeling of, okay, there's going to be a war here, and this isn't over just yet. And I think they were used perfectly. I didn't like...
And then that led straight to the ridiculous all-in spot where Ambrose just jumped off the top and jumped on all the lumberjacks as they were carrying Seth Rollins back to the ring, which was a really, really cool spot.
It was actually, very, very good to watch, actually, quite funny. Dean Ambrose for me is the best thing in WWE right now, and to be honest, this feud has been really good. I know you've been talking a lot about how it's a slow burning feud. There's a lot more to come out of it, as we saw on Raw, and definitely the lumberjack match was, I would agree, the best lumberjack match I've seen in my life, which isn't saying all that much, because there have been some pretty bad ones.
Yeah, don't worry. In the time that you've been watching wrestling, there's not many lumberjacks that you've missed out that I recommend you guys see, but this one is easily on the top of the list. Let's just quickly get into the Raw 3-count review. So the way the Raw 3-count review works, we pick out three of the biggest points of the show, and we discuss and break them down. Personally, like I thought it was a perfect follow-up to SummerSlam, where we saw a new champion coronated, and then we saw WWE's future megastars take center stage. I tell you what, if the main event is anything to go by, the future is looking goddamn fucking good, to be honest. Like, let's just get straight into my personal favorite point of the show, which was one of the best things in Raw that I've seen in a long time. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins had a rematch, and it main evented Monday Night Raw. Like, well, yeah. Do I need to say anything more? They had one. I personally thought this was better than the Lumberjack match. I thought because it was just the two of them. Of course, Kane was out there, but Kane had played his role and didn't completely overshadow what needed to be done. They had an amazing chemistry. Las Vegas was on fire. They went into everything that Dean Ambrose did. The last thing that I saw after Dean Ambrose was getting cut out of there was like, my God, when this guy comes back after he's done his movie and he comes back, he's going to be the hottest thing in pro wrestling. Easily.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And that match, you talk about the crowd. The crowd actually, up until the main event they were fully into, as were we all. The crowd that night were not good at all, in my opinion. But for the main event, which you would expect, because the match was so good, and you mentioned Ambrose and Rollins' chemistry, they showcase that all the time. The chemistry they can show together, display together, is really, really something. It almost gives me a feel of going back to Austin, Rock, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, these really Undertaker, Kane, these really old school feuds with a lot of chemistry. It really feels like that for me. And when you're saying about Dean Ambrose being carted off, and you know, when he does come back, he will be shot right to the top of that card, and he will be on the fans' lips and fans' minds. So it definitely works well for the feud. It works well for the show, and it works well for both Rollins and Ambrose, because this feud isn't going anywhere anytime soon. They're just a little break from it.
I absolutely just love the fact that right now no one knows where Dean Ambrose is. No one knows where he is. He didn't even get any medical attention. He refused it. He just disappeared. So now there's this mystery. When's he gonna come back? Is it gonna be when Rollins tries to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase? All these kind of like thoughts just play into like his return being one of the best things ever. And I find there's a lot of Stone Cold Steve Austin-ish kind of character to Dean Ambrose in regards to how he fights the authority and always fighting against adversity. Seriously, he is like what everyone wants John Cena really to be. I think he's much more of a rugged kind of version of it, so I think his future definitely looks bright. So we'll move into the other point that we had to make. You can't not talk about Monday Night Raw from last week and not talk about Paul Heyman's excellent promo. Yet another masterful promo that everyone should study if they're a pro wrestler and they want to improve on their promos. Like Bobby Heenan, eat your heart out. Well, this kind of stuff. It's an incredible promo that put over John Cena. He put over Brock Lesnar. He put over the fact that he was surprised that John Cena lasted so long, and just the authority. He put over Brock's legacy. And he just did it within a 5-minute promo. It's just exactly what you want from your pro wrestler.
And with Paul Heyman, when he's in that ring and he's talking, he makes it look effortless. He does. It's like he isn't even trying. And he's so good at when his delivery is so strong and purposeful that when he's talking, you're invested and you really believe in what he's saying. And that is a very rare quality for a promo caster to have, because obviously Paul Heyman's been working with Brock Lesnar for well over a decade now. He knows how to help Brock. He knows how to put him over. And that's exactly what he did on Monday. That promo was the second best thing on the show. And he emphasised the importance of the match, the importance of the result. And even when he plugs the network, everybody's I think getting sick of that now. But even when Heyman does it, it's definitely you always want to listen to it, because the way he speaks, he has a way of speaking to people that you have to listen. You have to listen to what he's saying, because you know you're going to be entertained. And that is essentially the point of a promo. So Paul Heyman is definitely one of the best promo cuts of all time. That was a highlight stand-up moment for Raw,
Yeah, absolutely. And then you had a point that you wanted to make about the Wyatts, and the fact that the Wyatts are just kind of dwindling right now in the tag team divisions, even though they're one of the best teams in the division by far.
Yeah, it's been really disappointing for me, because I'm a big fan of the Wyatts. My favourite of the three is actually Luke Harper, believe it or not. I am a big fan of Luke Harper. I think he's amazing. His facial expressions, the way he sells, and the way he behaves in the ring, his psychology is really good. But WWE, they seem to have dropped the ball on the Wyatts. They seem to have lost their concentration on them. They seem to have lost their effort towards pushing them. And you have Bray Wyatt, whose feud with Jericho was pretty lackluster. I don't think anybody would class that as a 5-star feud. Definitely not. And Also, Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, they first of all, they should have the belts at this point. I think they should have won the belts at Battleground. I was disappointed that they didn't. And the Usos are good as a team. I'm fine with them, but I think they should have the belts. And I think WWE have just completely... It feels like they've run out of ideas for the White Family.
I think the timing's everything, as I've said multiple times in the show. And I think the White's time was at Battleground, that 2 out of 3 falls match that stole the show. That was the time for the Whites to capture the championships. And now it's kind of like, well, put the titles on them now. It's not going to matter one iota, really, because now they're they're losing to Mark Henry in the Big Show. They're losing like every week, but like they are hard fought matches. I mean, I think that's their kind of like. Compensation to the fans, like, well, you know, they're still fighting him and whatnot, but definitely the Wyatts are kind of dwindling as their careers kind of roll on, so hopefully they'll be able to regain and do something with it. So let's get into the main event quickie. We're just going to run through the main event is main event. There's not very much that's happening, even though this week they did put a little bit of effort into making the show a little bit more must-see for people that have the WWE Network. Sheamus defeated Curtis Axel. It's the definition of a Superstars match. Sheamus won clean, obviously. Nikki Bella defeated Emma in her first outing since turning on her sister. I don't know what you thought about the segment, Oliver, that opened up Uproar after SummerSlam, but Nikki Brie Bella situation, I mean, like, Stephanie McMahon held the storyline together, no doubt, and she is easily one of the greatest heels the company has right now, and she's just so articulate and smooth. And I think Brie Bella benefited greatly from this feud, because how can you also, not when you're working with someone like that?
Yeah, Stephanie's definitely been, you know, she's been the glue, the backbone here. She's been the bridge between the two sisters, and that was, evident at SummerSlam. With regards to the opening promo on Raw, I didn't like it. Not because it didn't make sense or anything like that. It was a logical segment, logical reasoning. I don't think Nikki Bella is good on the mic at all. I don't think she looks comfortable. I really don't think she's good at all, and her delivery needs a lot of work, because honestly for me, it sounded like, when she was talking on Raw, to me that sounded like she was trying her best in her head to memorize exactly what she'd read on the paper backstage, and that is not how you want it. I mean, she should be watching Paul Heyman and see how his delivery works, because her mic skills are not good at all, and while I don't have a problem with the tone, I think she isn't selling it as well as she could be.
Yeah, just very quickly, I was listening to Steve Austin's podcast that's up there right now, and he had a fascinating, fascinating interview with Mick Foley. That's a two-parter that I listened to the second part. Definitely worth listening to if you're a pro wrestling fan. But Steve Austin, before he talked to Mick Foley, was talking about going to the SummerSlam conferences and all that stuff, and the 2K14 or 2K15 reveal. And he was... talking with Cesaro and talking with Roman Reigns and watching them just interact with the fans without a script. And the first thing he said is just like, they're just so natural and so charismatic just normally, that he thinks that maybe WWE is scripting their promos too much, so that the actual natural charisma that these people have can't be explored or expressed. Maybe these promos are just way too down the line, that, you know, we're going to get carbon copies of these superstars instead of the real thing.
Yeah, I do think WWE do restrict, especially because of the rating of this show. It's obviously a PG rated show, so there are certain things and certain, you know, behaviours that aren't appropriate.
I don't think you need to swear or anything like to get across a point. I'm talking about your natural ad lib promos that your Dusty Rhodes and your Dick Slaters and your Ric Flairs made a career out of, because they had bullet points and they talked about it. Like a Ric Flair promo, just very quickly, obviously we're getting a bit sidetracked, but a Ric Flair promo, every single time he went out of the bat in the 1980s and 1990s, he'd promote the city, he'd promote the match, he'd promote the pay-per-view, he'd promote his issues, and do it all within 30 seconds, and do it different every single time. And, you don't get that from just reading a script, you know, like, there's only so far you can take it, but... anyway, I just want to move on very, very quickly, because let's get to these main events quickies, because there's nothing really much to talk about. Slater and Gator defeated Los Matadores, which makes it a bit of a streak for Slater and Gator at the moment. Apparently, Hornswoggle was dressed up like a cow for some reason.
I, I don't even know. Why does he have a job?
I don't even know
why. Why does he have a job? Holmesworth dressed as a cow. Holmesworth dressed as a cow, for me, is like... It's like in line with Corporate Kane as one of the worst things on TV at the moment, and I don't want to see Hornswoggle anymore. He's really, fans are starting to hate him, and I wouldn't be surprised if one day soon he comes out and people throw litter at him. He's so annoying. I can't stand him.
He's very, very, very bad. But moving on, we had Mark Henry defeating Eric Rowan, which is a bit of odd because Mark Henry, it seems like he's in a rivalry with Rusev. Although he was involved in a match where he beat the Wyatts with the Big Show. So I had the feeling that they kind of rewrote the show on the fly on Monday. Because it sounds like Mark Henry is going to be versing Rusev. And by the way, I'm a big fan of that. I think Rusev and Mark Henry, I thought Mark Henry's natural reaction just to Rusev and getting pissed off and just calling Rusev a boy and then asking and then telling Lana, listen, you translate that to him and tell him what I really mean by saying boy. I think it's exactly what the Big E rivalry should have been like.
Mark Henry is a naturally intimidating person. He's definitely when he speaks and when he acts, there's definitely an air of legitimacy behind it. Because he's a legit tough man, there's no doubt in that.
We all remember how he was in 2011 when he turned heel and won the world championship. We need that. Absolutely. Came out of the blue. One of the best things coming out of 2011.
Oh yeah, definitely. And obviously, I agree with you because Raw did seem like they changed the script halfway through the show, because that whole Mark Henry Rusev confrontation would have been made much more surprising if Henry hadn't appeared an hour before that. Because obviously, him being in the match with Big Show, first of all, you know, those two have no business beating Wyatt and Rowan. Harper and Rowan, because they're much older and they don't need the win. But I'm not looking for the match because you're not going to disagree with you.
I only disagree with you if Show and Henry got the tag title shot, because in the eyes of the fans, the Wyatts were the last team to really give Usos a run for their money. So they have to beat the Wyatts to progress. I get that logic, and if it was going to be Henry and Show versus the Usos, you have to have the Usos win. You know what I mean? They have to win because you've got the former world champions, the team of former world champions, stepping up to the plate, being larger guys. But, I just kind of disagree with you just there.
Are you looking forward to the match?
Which one?
Mark Henry and Rusev.
If the crowd stays with it, sure. I think we'll be fine. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as good as the Swagger and Big E matches have been, but I think it'll be a solid match regardless. But moving on very quickly, just to finish off main event, obviously the major WWE World Championship announcement was that John Cena was going to be invoking his rematch a month from Sunday at Night of Champions. So I think WWE's got the right idea by announcing these little things on main event and making main event a bit more must-see. I just think they just need some better matches instead of Slater and Gator versus the Los Matadores, you know. Mm-hmm. But moving on to NXT. NXT. Let's keep rolling here. NXT. The NXT Weekly Awards. Now, this is the way we kind of review it. It's a little bit different because, you know, they're the developmental territory. We want to give them some accolades, you know, as they're progressing up the ladder to the main event roster. I personally thought this was a fun show that progressed the tournaments well and announced the next NXT special in 3 weeks. So we're going to get another NXT... What's it called? NXT Takeover? Yeah. Are you excited for NXT Takeover?
One thing I've noticed about watching NXT is WWE are have been very clever with the way that they build feuds there, and the way that they build storylines and the way that they build, you know, contenderships and matches up there, because obviously you have much younger talents, much more experience, and I think they need that kind of help creatively to be able to flourish and to be able to improve. And you definitely, with regards to the tag team matches on NXT were good. I liked the main event. I thought that was the best match of the show.
Very good.
And the way they built up throughout the show, and obviously we have NXT TakeOver coming soon, which I'm looking forward to. I'm pleased and looking forward to, you know, how these storylines, how these matches progress leading up to the event, because tag team, you know, storylines in the tag team division and, you know, competitiveness and, you know, the angst behind tag team matches is something that's almost been missing in WWE for quite a few years now, with the exception of a couple of teams. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think Triple H kind of agrees with all our sentiments in regards to the tag team division being dead, and I think he's doing a good job by putting up like tag teams like Big Cass and Enzo Amore, easily has like the biggest charisma I've seen in a long time, especially in NXT. Mm-hmm. You got Kalisto and Sin Cara, which kind of ties into my personal MVP of the week, which I thought was Kalisto. The former Samurai del Sol, for those who are fond of the independent pro wrestling kind of scene, he's an incredible talent that could easily surpass Rey Mysterio as being that kind of Mexican lucha character for WWE going forward. His English is fantastic. He moves like Rey Mysterio did back when he was in WCW in the 1990s. I think he's got a lot of good promise, and I think his tag team with Sin Cara is his ticket to the main event. Kalisto and Sin Cara are my picks for defeating the Ascension at TakeOver in 3 weeks.
Yeah, and like I said to you before we came on the air, that is the most logical thing that WWE can do with these two, because they fit each other perfectly. It's a good, as I said, logical match, and you're definitely going to get good matches and you know, a good storyline out of the two of them, and it will help them both long term and short term, because obviously if you have them together, you're going to get some good fast paced matches which will be good to watch, and also you talking about Kalisto will learn a lot, and when he is moved up to the main roster, which, you know, whenever that will be, I think he'll be a lot more prepared and a lot less green, if you know what I mean. So definitely, you're right about Kalisto. My personal MVP of the match, though, was of the show was Tyson Kidd, because I thought
Tyson
he really.
Kidd. Why Tyson Kidd?
Oh, because I thought his match with Tyler Breeze. Sorry, I thought it was a really good match, and while the finish wasn't so good, I actually thought he looked real strong coming off of it, because he's found wins hard to come by recently, so I think for him beating Tyler Breeze, I think
he'd
be good.
He did win by count,
though. Yeah, definitely. But I just think Tyson Kidd, he has a lot of potential. I've always liked him. So when he does get wins, no matter how they come, I just think he looks good. Not necessarily with the manner of the win. I just thought he looked good on NXT, and there was more spotlight on him because it wasn't a tag team match.
I think we've seen the best Tyson Kidd we've ever seen in WWE. It's a shame that they can't take the storyline that they've got going on with him and Natalya and put it on main event television, because I think it's easily one of the better storylines that WWE is doing at the moment. So obviously we're going to ease into NXT's weekly downside of the week. Who just left a sour taste in your mouth? And I think we're both in agreement. I personally think that Mojo Rawley took...
We agree.
Mojo Rawley. I'm hyped and I stay hyped, or some bullshit tagline like that. I think it's good that he's an athlete and he's got an athletic background, and that's what they push on NXT. That's good. But it's just. He runs the ring like the Ultimate Warrior. I don't know how to take him. Like, I don't know what his message is. Like, I don't know. He's not really doing very much for me right now. He's involved in a rivalry with Bull Dempsey, and Bull Dempsey, he's another story for another day. But, like, you know,
sure.
there's not a lot of and in the ring, I think it's where it takes the cake. His finisher is a sit down splash. It's like.
Mojo Rawley.
Nothing's clicking.
He's just not exciting at all. And there's nothing about him, when I look at him, there's nothing about him to me that screams anything entertaining or screams star in any way. And obviously, I mean, first of all, let's not look past the fact that his name is terrible. Mojo Rawley is a terrible name, in my opinion. It's like Dolph Ziggler, but Dolph Ziggler's actually good, has some talent. Mojo Rawley, he
certainly wasn't good when I first started, though. Dolph Ziggler sounded like a terrible
name. Yeah, Mojo Rawley has a bad name. I think he looks like he's just come out of prison. I don't think he looks very good. Honestly, yeah, I don't have very high hopes for him. And with the recent budget cuts and releases, I'm surprised he didn't go, honestly. And Bill Dempsey, to me, isn't much of an improvement, but you didn't see him as much on the show, obviously. So.
Well, they had faith in him because they built up this conflict with Rusev at the last takeover, and then Rusev just killed him dead, and I think that was his turning point. But now he's still involved in... when NXT is only an hour long every week, like, I think they should definitely be giving this time to someone else. Or, I don't know, maybe Prince Devitt and Kevin Steen, who are going to be coming up soon, you know, like...
When are we going to see them?
Your guess is as good as mine. They released a Twitter pic of them wearing stuff. They're wearing a new gimmick that... I think Prince Devitt has got this like painted gimmick thing that's going on, and Steen looks exactly like he used to. So, and they took a photo in front of an old photo of Triple H. So they're coming. We just don't know when. And I think that's the best thing. We just don't know when. So,
yeah.
But moving on to NXT's up and comer of the week. I think again we're both in agreeing that Becky Lynch was the NXT's up and comer of the week.
Yeah, I think it's telling when the women's matches on NXT are better than the women's matches on the main roster. I truly believe that. And I think Charlotte's doing really well. Her nickname, obviously deriving from her dad, really suits her. And the dirtiest diva in the game, I mean, it has a kind of ring to it. But anyway,
it certainly does. Have you seen the TakeOver match that her and Natalya had?
Yeah, I did see that. It was really good. Yeah, when was that? About 6 weeks ago now. Yeah, the last NXT ever was really good. Yeah,
incredible, incredible. It's an amazing match.
But the match that Becky and Charlotte had on NXT was surprisingly good. I think Becky, she's learning fast. And you said that you didn't like her match prior to this one.
No, I didn't. Her first match, I think I did a very quick review of it last show. And she got my downside of the week purely because she was doing jigs. I she was wrestling. It was messy. It was all over the place. I didn't even know who the hell this person was. Why she was Irish and she's doing a jig. It's such an unoriginal kind of take on where the person comes from. But now she seems like she's got a bit of a punk rock kind of high energy gimmick, and that's much better. But I thought she was much more improved. Looked really good against Charlotte. And hey, we have to remember very, very quickly that Charlotte's only been wrestling not even a full year yet. You know, So the fact that she's at that level right now is scary for how good that she could be like later down the line.
I think also, would you agree that Charlotte has a lot of pressure on her from her heritage?
Absolutely, absolutely. But at the same time, she's getting a lot of good little rubs because of who her father was. And sometimes, for the other Flair children that have wrestled, like David Flair, and that rub hasn't been that good because they weren't good performers themselves and they were rushed too quickly. So I think WWE has definitely learnt from WCW's mistakes. It does help that she is Ric Flair's father. Sorry, Ric Flair's daughter. Hold on. I think the fact that she's good is going to pay dividends for her. So if the TakeOver match is anything to go by,
I think it was good. I have to say, with NXT, we're all eagerly awaiting the arrival of David Benoit. I think that would be pretty entertaining to see.
Well, I don't think that's even on the cards, considering his last name.
I know. I would just like to see it. I think it would be very good. I think David would be very brave. I don't think it'll happen, but I would just like to see it personally.
I think they're very, very brave, but I don't think it's going to happen. But there's a lot of good wrestlers out there, and I think NXT is just add Kevin Steen and add Prince Devitt to the mix. Kalisto, Samurai Del Sol, Sami Zayn. Adrian Neville. I personally saw Pac, Adrian Neville, wrestle Loki when I went to WrestleMania 28 and went to the Dragon Gate show there and saw their 30-minute epic match. Oh, like, Jesus Christ, that guy can go. And, like, add all the other good wrestlers to the mix. NXT is just thriving with upcoming talent. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, so just moving on to SmackDown. We do the good and the bad of SmackDown, and I thought this was a good show just purely that they did a Randy Orton Roman Reigns centric show long storyline that progressed things nicely and kind of just showed that yes, Roman Reigns and Randy Orton will fight again. And what do you think about Randy Orton and Roman Reigns locking horns once again? You think it's a bit of an overkill, or you think Orton and Reigns should move on to other things?
I don't think it's overkill yet, because we've only had one pay-per-view match between the two, so I wouldn't say it's overkill yet. However, obviously you know, and other people know my thoughts on Randy Orton. I think he is a good opponent for Roman Reigns right now, and like you said, he was impressive on SmackDown. I always give him credit when he deserves it. His segment with RVD was pretty good. So I have to say, with regards to the SmackDown and the links to their rivalry, I do want to see them go at it one more time. I definitely think they can improve on their match at SummerSlam. It was okay, yep. And I think if you introduce sort of weapons or some kind of stipulation to their match, I think fans will want to see that.
Stipulation matches. You kind of wonder how what you could do with it. I don't think any weapons or anything could enhance it, because there's no real blood feud yet. Yet is the key word. But I think a 2 out of 3 falls match or something like that could definitely go well for Roman Reigns, because beat Randy Orton two straight falls. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, those kind of dominating things could play nicely. But in regards to SmackDown, I really liked the show centric story involving Orton and Reigns. For those who don't know, it was meant to be RVD versus Orton. Orton blindsided him and beat the shit out of RVD. Just pillar to post, beat him all over it. Finished off with the RKO onto his chair that was already set up. Vicious stuff. And it was really good to hear Orton just slowly, methodically destroy this man. And it was just a really good thing to see. It kind of reinvigorated my interest in Roman Reigns, because I know, sorry, Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, because I know his promos can be boring and okay at best. sometimes when he goes a little bit off script, he can be all right. But yeah, there's stages where Randy Orton cares a lot, and there's stages where Randy Orton doesn't give a shit.
That's always been his case. When you mentioned his whole slow, methodical, have we not seen that? I mean, come on. I mean, since 2009, that's all he's been, and it's boring. It's fucking tedious. I'm sorry. It's fucking awful. I can't stand this guy. And this whole thing that, you know, he's a household name, he's a really good wrestler. Those two things are true. I'm not going to debate them. But I'm just sick of everybody using those two things as a way of justifying how piss poor he is. He's awful. And occasionally he'll put in a good performance, and occasionally he'll look good. But I'm sick of his promos. I'm sick of his slow, methodical. I'm sick of his entrance and his music. Oh, that. I think you've hit
the nail on the head. I think what he suffers from right now is he needs to evolve. He needs to evolve his character. He needs to do something different. He needs to step out of the Viper thing. He really does. Because we've been privy to it for the last, like, 5 years, 6 years. He's been the same person. And I think all the great wrestlers of the generation that I know have evolved in some way, shape, or form, and I think he needs to find it again. One thing I liked about SmackDown that I saw a lot of in the Swagger versus Rollins match and the Rusev confrontation with Mark Henry is that it's good seeing wrestlers sell their injuries long after they've had matches where they've been injured. I think it adds another layer of realism to the confrontations. It shows you that these people are real people. Like, too often we've seen, like, matches and situations where like someone would be hospitalized and they'll be back spring to their step and running to the ring the next week, and whereas, like, Rusev literally got put in the ankle lock a few times from Jack Swagger. He's been selling it ever since. That puts over not over Rusev, but also Jack Swagger's ankle lock, you know. It works both ways.
Yeah, I've actually been really impressed with Rusev for a while now, for a couple of months.
Me too.
He's been really, really selling that ankle lock well, because obviously historically, how many people tapped out to that move? Obviously, it wasn't made famous by Jack Swagger, but historically the move put a lot of pressure and a lot of pain on an injury on people. So Rusev has done well to kind of rekindle that, the whole legitimacy around that move, because it is a very good move, and Rusev has done well to sell that. So even when he's been beating Swagger, he's kind of looked weak, and he's made Swagger look good, which is a very big compliment to him. Considering he's still a young talent, he still does not completely know what he's doing. He's done really well, and I'm really impressed with the way he's sold the feud.
I think he's definitely the most improved wrestler of 2014 by far at this stage. I mean, his selling at SummerSlam was like masterful. He was almost too good, because he was meant to be the heel out of the whole thing, and he was fighting through the pain to beat Swagger. It was kind of a bit backwards, but Rusev is definitely on the rise and getting better and better. So very quickly, the bad of SmackDown. I mean, Todd Phillips. Todd Phillips is a play-by-play announcer on NXT, and I watched NXT, and I really felt that there was a lot of good charisma. He showed a lot of good natural charisma, and now he's obviously been brought to the main event, to a primetime television show in SmackDown, and he's put with JBL and Cole, and completely just didn't do anything. Said the generic things. He was buried by Cole and JBL. I get why. I mean, you're thrown into this situation, they throw you in the deep end, they throw some curveballs at you purposely to see how you're going to react to them. But, God, Todd Phillips looked like a generic announcer that we've seen millions of times before.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, honestly, I think JBL, first of all, has a history of doing this. JBL has buried quite a few people in that booth. I remember Cody Rhodes being on the commentary booth, and he laid into him a while ago. But with Todd Phillips, I think NXT is where he belongs at this point. Just for a while, I think he needs to improve. I think you're right about him showing, some charisma, showing some kind of enthusiasm, and he's definitely improving on NXT, because he isn't a bad announcer. I just think he needs a little bit of moulding. Also, I think, to be honest, I mean, it sounds a little bit sad for me to say this, but I think JBL and Cole could, in story, I could go a little bit easier on him. It's not like it's the focal point of the show. People don't tune in to see Michael Cole tear, rip into Todd Phillips. You know what I mean? So I think
they had an affinity with doing that over and over again, which can be all right, but it completely distracts from the match you're watching.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, I've been very, very critical of actually all the commentary in WWE recently. You may remember I wrote something on the site about this. And JBL for me is a beaten dog. There's nothing he can say now that will, rekindle any kind of interest in him.
As a pro wrestler, sure, but I personally think that JBL, especially this week, showed a lot of good heel announcer kind of qualities. He was on fire on Raw, just ripping into people. But I thought it was done in such a way where it worked for the match, or the match that he called. I think there's still something he can give as a colour person, though.
Yeah, sometimes it fits and sometimes it's overkill with JBL. You never know what you're going to get. I mean, if I asked you, who do you think is the worst of the three announcers at this point?
On Raw?
Yeah.
It has to be Jerry the King Lawler, unfortunately, and that pains me to say that, because Jerry the King Lawler, when I grew up in the night, and when he didn't have a PG-13 net around him, he was the funniest guy. He had the best chemistry with JR. The commentary team was one of the staples for Monday Night Raw for me as a kid growing up. And he is a complete shell of his former self. He doesn't watch SmackDown. He comes to Raw and he just does whatever he wants. So, it's not... Definitely, he needs to be replaced. And obviously, bring Renee Young up from NXT. I think she could definitely be good.
Renee Young can as well. And in a world where wrestling definitely is a male dominated community, and it's so easy to see a woman and think, oh god, she must be terrible, she's a woman, so she doesn't know what she's doing. But Renee Young has actually been pretty good. I think she gets her point across well, and she gets herself involved in each feud. She seems to know what she's talking about. So I actually think Renee Young is actually one of the good up and coming announcers in WWE right now. and I wouldn't mind seeing her on Raw maybe or on a SmackDown whenever she's around. So definitely, I think she's doing well.
Yeah, throw her out there and see what she can do. Definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah, so just very quickly, what's there to watch on SmackDown? Check out the Stardust and Goldust versus the Wyatts. That was just a really good, solid TV match. I love the Wyatts killing the Dusts afterwards, so you see things like that. I mean, it's not a complete burial of the Wyatts at the moment, because they are still, like, handily destroying people, and unlike they've done it on SmackDown with the Dusts. But, you know, well, they just need... Hey, wins and losses still matter in 2014. But, and also, just check out Orton killing RVD. That was always very entertaining.
And also, check out Hornswoggle as a cow.
No, I don't think so. Well, that was the main event, and I think that's... we should really publicise that, because that's not really a selling point for the WWE Network. I really don't, like, that notion is just, yeah. They need to get rid of some people. I'm surprised that he survived some of the latest roster cuts.
Yeah.
Okay, so good. So we look at TNA every week, and I always ask, good, was it good, or was it TNA awful? Get it? TNA awful? See what I do there with every week, and do you think that's funny? No. Oh my god, you have to realise I do this show every week on my own. I'm always looking for a good reaction. I have this image in my head of people laughing profusely. But anyway, was the show good or TNA awful? What did you think, Oliver? What did you think from what you watched?
Okay, so I watched about 75% of TNA this week, Hardcore Justice, and as you know, I've been a very big skeptic of TNA for quite a few years now. I stopped watching TNA in about 2012, 2011. But I watched it again this week, and I was actually pleasantly surprised with what I saw. I really enjoyed the main event and the finish, and I really enjoyed... We were talking about Bram and...
What was the main event, just for the people who haven't watched it?
Okay, so the main event was a cage match, five-way cage match. And basically, the winner, you can only win via escaping the cage, and there was no pinfall submission. And we had basically Bobby Roode and Eric Young tied for finish. They both escaped at the same time. And we've seen this kind of finish before, but it's not a bad way of continuing a story.
It's the old school Hulk Hogan Paul Orndorff finish from the late 80s, if you remember that at all. Yeah, but when they were feuding for the WWE Championship. Yeah, it's done to death, and I thought they did a very good job of... You couldn't really tell who was going to win. But I think what you're seeing every week now, because I know you've just started watching again, Oliver, is you're seeing shows where they didn't really know when the company was going to fold, or if they were going to fold. They didn't know the company's future. So they're booking shows just purely just to fill it with content that's watchable and enjoyable, and making the show a good 2 hours of pro wrestling. They don't really have an idea of where they're going creatively. That's why they're doing six-way cage matches and Janice on a pole matches and hardcore matches, because they're just like, well, we might as well make the 2 hours enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I think they're thinking too short-term, and they're not thinking enough in the long-term, if that makes any sense to you. These matches, were good on TNA this past, what day was it, Wednesday? And the matches were definitely good, but it didn't seem like there was too much thought going into why each match was happening and why each, you know, result happened. It was sort of like, to me, it felt like, okay, this is happening, but I don't really know why it's happening. But the matches were entertaining, definitely.
I think what TNA is doing right now with their product is they're giving us concept matches that fans want to see. Just very quickly, Oliver, can you just take me off the mic? So I can hear myself.
I'm sorry.
Good. I think it's all right now. Oh, no, I can hear myself.
Okay.
Let's try it again. Perfect. Oh, and I can hear myself again. No. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Let's just run with it. What TNA is doing right now with their product is they're giving us matches, they're giving us future feuds, old feuds that we've seen before. Never have you seen a company promote another company as well as TNA's doing with WWE right now, with the Dudleys and the Hardys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and sure, for the long term, it's not good. It's completely what WWE is not doing. But I think they're just thinking that the company's not going to be around for long, so we might as well make the show entertaining. And personally, like, Dudleys, Hardys, and the Wolves for the tag titles, that sounds like a pretty good three-way tag feud to me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Part of it, I think, with TNA now is also damage limitation, because I think people within the company know that TNA probably won't be around for much longer. So if they can go out on the biggest high possible, then that's at least something positive for them to be kind of look back on. So I wanted TNA to do well, but at least if this is their last kind of stand, then at least it's something positive and they're providing entertaining matches. So, you know, there's a reason to tune in, and they don't go out, you know, they go out with some dignity, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Well, I made this segment of the show purely because I just thought TNA is going to be shit every week, and it would be my outlet just to rant and rave like every pro wrestling fan does. That's why I called it like TNA good or TNA awful. But my verdict for the show is it was TNA good. And
yeah.
Do you rate the show the same?
I give it the same. I'd say TNA good. I was surprised, like I said, pleasantly surprised. So
this
I give
is coming
it
from one of the someone that absolutely hates TNA.
Oh yeah,
they're,
I can't stand the company. Yeah. So
exactly,
you know,
right.
They've done well when I start complimenting them.
There you go. Exactly right. So guys, like, if you're looking for a 2-hour television show you can just watch it, you can walk away and not be worried about the storylines, but you get some good wrestling matches and a pretty good atmosphere in New York City. Check out the TNA Impact next Wednesday, because I think they're going to be finishing up their New York City tapings in the next 2 weeks. So the next two shows should definitely be good. So just very quickly, matches of the week. What were your top three matches of the week in from third to first, Oliver?
Regarding all shows?
Regarding the whole week.
Okay, so number one for me was Brock Lesnar versus John Cena.
Yep.
Definitely number one. Number two, I would say, would be Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose on Raw. And number three would be Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose at SummerSlam.
Well, that's exactly what I actually had identically. That's the three matches that everyone should go out of the way to see this week. I mean, Lesnar and Cena, I don't care what anyone else says. I mean, someone talked to me the other day and was like, oh, it's just like Scott Steiner versus Triple H at Royal Rumble 2003 when Scott Steiner did all those belly-to-belly suplexes. Have you seen that match? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah. And I didn't like the match,
it was horrible. But they're comparing it to that. It's just like, no. Scott Stone just kept doing the same move because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing in the ring with Triple H. Like, this is a completely different story, you know? Like, and Brock Lesnar and John Cena, like, story, as we've said before.
Yeah.
There are matches for the week, guys. Check out those top matches. Honorable mentions goes to Reigns, Sheamus, and RVD versus Rybacksel and Orton from Raw this past Monday night. Check out the Dust versus the Wyatts from SmackDown this week. And Sin Cara and Kalisto versus Adam Rose and Sami Zayn. Check that one out straight away as well. Okay, so very quickly, we're going to go to the podcast of the week. Now, we're going to try something different this week. I think we're going to maybe make this a bit of a theme for the show going forward, but I took out an excerpt from Jim Ross's podcast that I think everyone should listen to, that hopefully silences the fans out there that are just crying and so upset about what happened between John Cena and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. I think he really kind of encapsulates it well, so just have a listen and tell me what you think.
I thought Lesnar was a beast. Lesnar is the biggest, most impressive, real athlete that WWE has ever signed. With all the USC, the almost making the Vikings, and what he's done and becoming the USC heavyweight champion, so young. So can Lesnar be an effective WWE world champion working a part-time schedule? You damn right he can. They did it for years, the traveling NWA champion, and now WWE can do the great vignettes, the great videos, and Lesnar's got the great Paul Heyman, his advocate that can be at every TV representing the WWE World Champion. I would have you pay that $9.99 to see Lesnar on the network on pay-per-views. If he fights once a month, that's enough for me. I don't need to see him in an enhancement match. I don't need to see him in an obligatory match on TV. To prove what? To prove what? You can still see his image. You can still be, he can still be represented just fine with Paul Heyman.
So there you go. I mean, like, I think that just encapsulates everything we've been saying about why Brock Lesnar is, I hate to say it, best for business. I mean, like, yeah. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think JR's got it spot on there because people are focusing too much on when will we see Lesnar, what will he be doing, and I think people instead should be focusing on what does Lesnar represent and what does he bring, you know, what is he all about. I think this is what people need to be looking at personally for me, because Brock Lesnar is a draw, proven draw. We were talking about this on Facebook the other day, and Brock Lesnar is a proven draw, there's no doubting that. And I wanted to bring something else up while we're on the subject as well. I was receiving messages on the site's page and personally on Facebook and stuff that Lesnar apparently, people are saying that he doesn't know what he's doing in the ring because he was throwing 16 suplexes at Cena, and apparently he can't wrestle, which really pissed me off. It pissed me off to listen to that, because Brock Lesnar is one of the best wrestlers in the company.
Yeah, it just comes down to these fans that have been out there, have been watching them, they've been long-time wrestling fans, and they just can't wrap their head around what Lesnar did in the ring and just found the match boring and all that stuff. It's like, if you just look beyond the technical, and like I'm going to do a cheap plug at right now. I've got an article coming out in the next week, and it's going to be a thank you letter to John Cena. It's going to be directed to John Cena, thanking him for his match against Brock Lesnar. And guys, just check that article out next week, because it's going to be one of those should kind of clear the air about why what John Cena went through just completely enhanced WWE's business going forward. You know, like it goes beyond the technical. It goes beyond the Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Halloween Havoc kind of matches. They don't have to be like that to kind of make a point and make a point that lasts.
Yeah, definitely. And also, with regards to what JR said, do you agree that he says that Lesnar is physically the most impressive athlete that they've ever signed? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely freak of nature. Like I was watching Lesnar. I watched his first match live, his first interaction on WWE television. I've been watching him ever since. I've seen things that he's done in his prime, that he did to The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell, that he did to The Big Show, like the matches he had against Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit. This guy is incredible, an incredible athlete, and just can just do amazing things. Like, he had some of the best matches the Big Show's ever had in his life. And like that is a testament to the wrestler that Brock Lesnar is. This part-time bullshit, this is not 1980 anymore. This is not like 1985 where the championship meant the world to the company. We're so beyond that now. Like, the company can survive without it being without the championship being there every single step of the way. And again, like, it maintains the allure of the champion coming back to defend it here and there. Why not take this time to emphasize how important it is to be the number one contender for the championship? Why don't we emphasize with the champion not being there? You know?
Yeah, and also why not take at this point also take the time to build some kind of queue in terms of challenges. Build up contenders. And this is the ideal opportunity for new talent and new stars to come through and push up almost just underneath Lesnar, because he's going to need new opponents. You can't have Lesnar and Cena go at it for 7 straight pay-per-views. So he's going to need this. WWE will now need that and use this time to build new angles and new stars and help to elevate them up the card. So the time away and the spotlight coming off of the title will be replaced by a spotlight going on to the wrestlers, which is essentially where it's supposed to be. So I think it's positive all around.
Absolutely. And like, are we going to have like fans disagree with what JR and Mick Foley and Steve Austin and how they somewhat agree with what we're saying. So I don't know. fans just kind of just question where they, some of the fans should just question where they're coming from in regards to their complaints and the with Brock Lesnar being world champion. Okay, very quickly,
yeah.
We've got to be very, very quickly, because we've only got 10 minutes left of the stream left, so we want to just try and fit this in very, very quickly. The weekly visits to the Vault, the match that everyone should check out if they've got the time, is Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit for the WWE Championship from Royal Rumble 2003. Now, I'm just going to very quickly go through this. Easily one of Chris Benoit's shining performances in his career. In a match where it looked like Team Angle, who actually emerged onto the main roster during this rivalry, it looked like they were going to become an interference all the way through the match, but they were thrown out before the match even started, and what we got was 30 minutes of two world-class athletes tearing it up and just putting everything on the line. When Chris Benoit, like, this match was my favorite match growing up as a kid, up until when I started watching, you know, NWA and WCW from like the 80s and 90s. That was my match for a long, long, my favorite match for a long time. But this is the Chris Benoit that I choose to remember. I don't know about you, Oliver, but like, there's these kind of matches. Like, you sit back and you're like, yeah, like, this is how I choose to remember someone who left this world pretty damn badly.
Yeah, definitely. He left, obviously disgraced himself, unfortunately, because the work that he'd put in prior to his death for years had been so good, and he was so you know, highly respected amongst everyone in wrestling, that it's, you know, a huge shame. But that match for me was definitely match of the year. I mean, I think we can both agree that match was match of the year, 2003.
Yes.
And
at the same time, though, you did have Jericho and Michaels from WrestleMania 17, though. Sorry, 19.
No, I think it, Angle Benoit to me was match of the year for that year.
Yeah.
But so many good spots, so many obviously they both wrestle in a similar way. They both wrestled in a similar way. Technically they were, you know, superb, and they could go for you know, almost hours on end and wouldn't get tired. Suplexes,
yep.
Submission maneuvers, their arsenal were very, very similar. And obviously you have, they're both very athletic, and they can both pull out a moonsault or a diving headbutt like you see in the match. So they're very much, you know, they have a bag and they have a lot of tricks in their bag. So the match is really, really good. And for me, what makes the match is, come the end of the match, when Kurt Angle leaves the arena, you have a standing ovation at the end of every match to some degree, but you have an entire arena up and
yeah,
applauding Benoit for his efforts, and it's an
and Benoit was crying. He was crying when he was getting
that kind of emotion. Very powerful, yeah. So I always remember Benoit for that. Obviously, it's hard when you think of Benoit. You know, very different things come to your mind. But that match for me was one of his highlights in wrestling in general. So I definitely recommend everyone listening to check that out.
Shawn Michaels said a long time ago that submission wrestling is such an amazing art form that he wished he used a bit more when he was coming up, because it adds this layer of drama that you can't really get anywhere else. And you got Kurt Angle's ankle lock versus Chris Benoit's cripple crossface, and like the drama and the emotion, and seeing Benoit screaming in pain, and then reversing the hold and getting into another hold, and like the finish was beautiful to me, because you had Angle try for that ankle lock over and over and over again, and Benoit just didn't quit, you know, and made people believe for that 30 minutes that Benoit could actually debunk the plans that WWE had at the time, and that was Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania, and that Chris Benoit was going to go to WrestleMania as champion.
Yeah.
And it was because of the ankle lock. Because finally, the one moment we just know that Benoit was screwed, he gets that ankle lock, on Benoit, and then he grapevines the leg, and then that's it. You know, like, it's just like, oh, fantastic match for anyone that loves pro wrestling, loves technical pro wrestling. You know,
and also, you notice when you watch the match, the amazing chemistry they had. Just together,
oh, yeah.
They meshed so well together, even as a team, you know, their feud from, you know, deriving
yes.
from autumn 2002, it lasted quite a few months, and that was really the culmination of the feud, I think. And really, the chemistry they had together and against each other was something we hadn't really seen too much of until that point. So I really, really think that match was one of the best matches I've ever seen. So I agree. I really do see, you know, when you say that was your favourite match for so many years, I completely see that, because every piece that match needed was fit together perfectly. And it was just like watching magic, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Well, that's all we have time for tonight, everybody. As always, thank you so much for listening, wherever you may be out there in wrestling radio land. And thanks, Oliver, for coming on the show. Really do hope that you enjoy yourself, and then we should definitely have you back on the road, down the road somewhere. Do you have anything to plug at all, like Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. So if anybody's listening, you can go to over to Twitter and follow me at Oliver, NORGROVE. And as always, visit Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, the Facebook page and the site. A lot of great stuff going up there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the future, and thanks for having me on, Joel.
Yeah, anytime, man, anytime. Along with Oliver's work, we've got a lot of new writers that have come on board in the last week. I've been very quiet with my Wrestling Weekly Rope Break post this week, but I've got a lot of new content upcoming for all you guys, and do go head over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com for all your editorial article needs. And if you want to reach me, by all means, follow me at Twitter at WrestlingRBreak, capital R, capital W, capital B, and tell me what you think of the show, because I thrive off all your feedback, good or bad. Send me a message and tell me what you think of the show. So once again, thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Wrestling's Week That Was.